welcome back to But Where Are You From, a podcast by Be Seen, Britain's East and Southeast Asian network, and I'm your host today, Viv Yao. It feels like absolutely ages since I've last done a podcast record. I think the last one that I did was Lunar New Year, so it's been a while. So it's really, really nice to be back recording on my dining room table, looking at a very messy kitchen right now. I've been doing some house renovations recently, so I'm painting my bathroom. It's a red. I never thought I'd go for red, but trust me, it's more like a terracotta. I got it from Lick, the eco-friendly paint company, and my sister described it as an angry menstrual red, but I actually really enjoy it. Also, with Be Seen related news, we are actually launching our EC Heritage Month 2024 theme in May time. So keep an eye out for anyone who wants to get involved with EC Heritage Month this September. It's a really good theme, even if I do say so myself. And we're going to be working with some really amazing partners this year. So please do keep an eye out on our website and echeritagemonth.co.uk for our upcoming theme. So I just wanted to share a bit about our guest, Keith Khan, before we actually get into the podcast that I recorded with him on a very, very rainy afternoon in Manchester, obviously. So Keith is an international artist who makes performance film, drawing, textiles and digital art. He began his career designing carnival costumes in Trinidad and the UK. So within his work, he showcases his layered identities as a Muslim with Indo-Caribbean heritage who was raised in London. He's also incredibly humble. So you'll be able to tell just by listening to our record that he credits just about everyone else apart from himself for the most part, which I feel like is the sign of a truly successful person who's done a lot. We actually did this very spontaneously after I watched one of the rehearsals of its upcoming show, The Accountants. We ended up having my laptop balanced on a box of veggies in his hotel room, which was very, very kind of haphazard way of recording a podcast. Didn't have any equipment with us, but we managed to make it work. And Keith was just an amazing sport throughout. Really, really excited for everyone to hear the podcast today. So in partnership with Factory International, we actually have a limited amount of £3 tickets, that's right, I said £3 to attend the show across the 4th, 5th and 7th to the 11th of May 2024 at Aviva Studios in Manchester. Please check the show notes for my exclusive discount code for you to use. It's 2 tickets per transaction. There's booking fees that apply. There's booking fees that apply, and you can book via the link in our show notes. But £3 though, you can't even go to the cinema for £3 anymore. So this is an amazing community offer that Factory International have shared with you today. So I'm just going to read out the description of the show because it's absolutely epic. Experience an electrifying encounter of culture as China and India take center stage in this awe-inspiring theatrical event from visionary artist Keith Khan, choreographed by Shishin Dance Theatre and Terence Lewis Contemporary Dance Company. This dance extravaganza challenges our notions of identity and cultural dominance. Main characters Cash and Liam, voiced by the talented Josh Hart and actor and author Shobhna Gulati, are of British Chinese and British Indian heritage. Delivered via texts and voice notes, their banter and soul-searching dialogues playfully debates which cultural superpower reigns supreme, from food to iconic landmarks and spiritual beliefs. This battle is enriched by a high-tech visual and acoustic feat crafted by the area-nominated sound artist Somatic and the award-winning design studio I Don't Love You Anymore, providing stunning immersive visuals plus lighting design from the award-winning Simon Corder and dramaturgy by Jude Christian. Brought to you by Keith Khan, whose grand artistic creations have adorned events from the Notting Hill Carnival to the London 2012 Olympic Games, The Accountants invites you on a global journey right from your seat.
Thank you so much for joining, Keith. Really, really happy to have you. That question, but where are you from, can be interpreted in so many different ways, depending on who's asking, where you are, and the intention behind the question as well. So I'd love to hear from you. But where are you from, Keith?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And it is a question that is such a challenge for so many people, especially for me. Yeah. And I often feel that I have to, especially to Indian people, I have to explain 150 years of colonial history because I'm from Trinidad. Well, my family is from Trinidad. Mm. And clearly, the Indians, and everyone goes, oh, but you're not African. And you kind of go, yeah, because the Africans are not Trinidad. They're not indigenous people of the Caribs or Arawaks. Mm. but we were all part of the slave trade in terms of when the slave trade finished or they abolished slavery, they then brought Asian Indians from Calcutta and Madras on boats to the Caribbean on these terrible contracts, which is also what they did to Chinese people as well.
Yeah.
And that's why the railways exist in South Africa. There's the same trade. So it was people, I think, who were probably very keen to get out of their countries or thought this was a better opportunity. So where are you from? It's like, wow, like it's a rabbit hole of information that you can fall into.
Mm.
Because I guess the second question is always, but where are you really from?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. And then it's like, yeah.
And they never like want to accept your first answer. Yeah. It's kind of like an interrogation until they're like satisfied with putting you in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
I even had this today. A guy came to fix my extractor fan and my fiance, I went into the bedroom to do some work. And then he asked my fiance, what does your partner do? And then followed it with, where is she from? And I was just like, why is this happening in my own home? When like, I just want you to fix my extractor fan. I don't need you to ask me where I'm from. And I said to my fiance afterwards, I was like, I feel like that was horrible for that to happen in my own home. But also it can be a really good like exploration into talking about identity, especially with people of colour. There's an understanding there, I think, with
sometimes. Well, sometimes I feel I'm a bit aggressive about it because I get so irritated with it being asked constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And actually sometimes that inquiry is genuine.
Yeah.
And I guess you shouldn't really, like, kids sometimes. Mm-hmm. Something like that happened to me and I'm like, they just want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, I shouldn't maybe have been quite so. But it does, I think if you're not white, it does get your back up every time. That's the problem because it is used as a...
Yeah.
But maybe sometimes it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's death by a thousand cuts, though, isn't it? Like, you have probably been asked that so many times that, of course, you're going to react in that way because of the intention behind how the question's been asked.
Oh, I always try to be nice about it, but I always balance it between saying Wimbledon.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't give them what they want.
Yeah.
That's what I say. I go, I'm from Warrington.
Yeah.
Sarathon. And I had that once in a lift at Manchester Hotel. I got stuck in a lift with a group of like middle-aged white men who were drunk on a Saturday night. And then I just knew they were going to say something to me. And then this white guy just went, where are you from? And I said, Warrington. And then he was like, you don't look like you're from Warrington. And I was like, why is it? Because I'm not white. And his mates just like cracked up laughing. And like my heart was going bum, 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 bum. It was being so fast. But like I was just like glad I didn't give him what he wanted by telling him because it would just satiate his curiosity and like it didn't add any value to my life other than really, really piss me off, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, welcome to Manchester, rainy Manchester. Yeah, you just had a very, very wet walk back to your hotel room. How's your stay been in Manchester so far?
It's been really nice. We've been really well looked after by Factory International. I have to say, can't fault them at all.
Mm.
We've been invited. So there's the Chinese cast and the Indian cast in another building. And they've just invited me to a hot pot in their hotel room, just great. So it's like, we don't even have to go out for that. So we're being looked after and then we're also being doubly looked after by the people, which is really warming.
That is just like community care, though, in a nutshell, isn't it? Like, come over for dinner after we've just spent a whole day working together. And it makes me laugh so much that they have a hot pot thing in their hotel room. That's just...
When they arrived, they brought so much food with them. Both the Indian companies and the Chinese company, they brought so much food.
Brilliant.
And I was like going, well, but you know, there's a really good Chinatown here, which they've discovered, of course, on the one.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a good Asian area here as well.
Yeah.
Which I brought into this trip, actually.
Yeah. Really, really good. I used to go there all the time as a student and when I was younger as well. So you're an esteemed artist and a creative that has sat on many boards and councils. Like, you created award-winning work and just... really important work that speaks to displacement, identity, history. But before we talk about your latest project, The Accountants, I'd love to firstly hear more about Keith Khan and who are you when no one is watching?
I think no one's been watching me for a very long time, Nana, so I've developed some pretty bad habits, so that's quite good.
Like what?
Well, I live in Spain, so day sleeping.
Okay. Well, which is called to Spain.
Just called to Spain.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. When no one's watching, I'm quite diligent and I quite like doing stuff of my own.
Mm-hmm.
quite like making things, quite like sewing. So probably if no one's watching,
yeah,
my vanity will probably force me to make an outfit for myself, which is always good value.
Yeah. Have you got anything that you're wearing?
No, I gave some stuff. I've got some stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not wearing it today. But
not wearing it today. I feel like the Spanish have got it right when it comes to siestas. And I've been reading this book recently, which talks a lot about pushing back against grind culture and like being really anti-capitalist in our work, because it's just a system to oppress us, essentially. And so I've been really intentional with actually taking naps during the working day or when I feel like I need it, because it's like the space to dream and imagine and actually just not be part of the system, because time doesn't exist when we're sleeping, which...
And now I realize the Chinese phenomena as well.
To nap, yeah.
They all nap, all the cast nap.
Yeah.
And they say, yes, we do it every day, but we don't do it for more than... They said the perfect time is 20 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I feel groggy after like 20 minutes. But I actually didn't make that link, you know, that it was a Chinese thing. I very much have just been, because I think I've been so indoctrinated by working the 9-to-5 Western society, working late hours and like bragging about it on social media and stuff. For me, it's been kind of like tying it in with my identity and then like my ethics as well. I'm pushing back on that because it does. I don't want to be kind of a slave to capitalism my whole life. I feel like I don't need that in my life. But never made that link. That is actually a Chinese thing.
It is. Well, clearly, because they're all there napping. It seems very good. It seems like a very good idea. And it's obviously a very... And actually, if your body acclimatizes to that, it's a good thing for it, I think.
Mm. Yeah, my parents have always been very good sleepers as well. Like, my mum, every time, like, I say to her, oh, I slept, like, let's say 10 hours today, she's always like, well done. So, like, she always congratulates me after I've had a really good night's sleep.
Yeah, I guess in answer to your question, sleeping, that's probably one of the things that I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Because it is one of the things that gets taken away from when you get stressed or hyper busy.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, sleeping is a real privilege.
Yeah.
If you can do it regularly and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and if you sleep well, it's just the best feeling when you've had a really good night's sleep. I'd love to talk about your upcoming show at Factory International, The Accountant. So your dad was actually an accountant, is that right?
Yeah. He was. He was an actuary for London Court, so he used to go around all the different courts and do stuff.
I don't even know what that means. What is an actuary?
No, I'm not actually sure. There's a type. I think it's a slightly senior accountant who looks up. Right. There's lots of different types of accounting. Okay. But you've just seen a run through, so I'm just curious also to know what you thought.
Oh my gosh, Keith, where do I even start? Because I'm just really glad we're having this chat now, because had it been earlier and I had not seen the rehearsal, it would have been difficult. I feel like the marketing, as great as it is, doesn't do it justice to what I've seen already. And we've seen up to kind of bit of act two at the moment.
It does finish in act two. There's no act three. You've seen nearly the whole show.
I don't even know where to begin, because like I want to focus so much on the dancing aspect, but also the relationship between Liam and his auntie, auntie Cash. But then also Liam's identity as someone who is mixed race, going to travel in China and India, and like his exploration of identity. It was just like it triggered a lot of things for me, I think.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's why I asked you, because that's what it is.
Yeah, it really did.
I'm really glad, because that's why I made that work, really. It's just like, well, I just didn't want anything that was linear.
Yeah.
All our synapses to the identity, and they're constantly trod on over here.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually just doing something and having those dancers who are so culturally strong from China and India really changes the way it all fits together.
Yeah, and you can really see that come through and how they move as well.
And the theme of accountants was a way to get data in. Because the thing about it, I wanted to make a show that was about big data to some extent, and accounting was a simple way to cover that, to get it in.
Yeah.
Because everything that we show on the screen, that's not true, because you've got Cash and Liam, but on the big screen is fact. It's all fact about China. And did you find any of that interesting?
Yeah, like I was thinking about the fact that in terms of like data, I've always really struggled with data because it only paints half the picture for me. Like me and you were statistics of part of a wider consensus of something. We fit into kind of multiple groups of data. And so when I see that, it's really hard for me to contextualize it, like seeing like how many Asians are in X country. And then I was thinking about my own. I was like, I find it really hard to contextualize my story and my family's story, my heritage, my ancestry within data. It only tells half a story, and you need that kind of interpersonal relationship, which is what we see between Liam and Cash, his auntie/not auntie,
which is why I asked you when you came in the room, are we both in the same box, which is Asian? But when, you know, it's so interesting that actually on tick box forms, well, okay, we have East or Southeast Asian, but that's a geographical thing. But actually, in generic data on all those things, we both tick the same box.
And yet we're so different. Yeah. It's like even being in that rehearsal room today, hearing people speak Mandarin, and then I'm not sure what language Terence speaks.
Many languages spoken in that room.
Well, he was speaking the mixture of English and also his own native language to his dancers. Yeah. Then you heard Xixin speaking to her dancers in Chinese, of which I understood a tiny bit as well. But then I was speaking to Kwong and like
Cantonese.
In Cantonese, who he grew up in, like in
Bristol.
In Bristol, yeah. And we were sharing a bit about our ancestry. We've had very similar kind of history of his parents leaving China because they were poor. And then coming to Hong Kong, which is what my grandparents did as well.
Are your grandparents in the restaurant trade as well?
My family are. My parents are in the takeaway trade, or they were in the takeaway trade. And then wider cousins are in the restaurant trade. So
it's incredible how many Chinese people really are.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I feel like just, being in that room, there was a kind of like lots of feelings of pride, I think, as well. And then hearing the dynamic between the two main characters just through voiceover, because we don't actually see them, it's all just through voiceover, making me feel a lot of things, thinking about my own relationships with my own aunties who like send me overbearing WhatsApp voice notes. and just like hearing Liam try to explore his identity in Asia and feeling like there's something that he says where he's like, they don't understand that I don't speak Chinese. And which is like what I feel when I see someone who's Mandarin speaking, when I come across them and then they ask me, and I feel this like sense of shame because I feel like I'm not being Chinese enough because I can't speak that language. So I feel like the show is going to resonate with people very differently depending on where they come from.
Yeah.
Because I think people like me and you, we have kind of the space to explore identity. But then like if someone from China or someone who was born in India, they come from a majority, like my friends who come from those places, they don't feel the need to kind of necessarily explore in that way.
Which was the issue kind of that it was great to work with Xixin and Terence and Maruk from the two companies, because that cultural strength they have, we don't have. So when they came on the R&D periods, the research and development period for the project, they're like, well, you know, that's not very interesting. And I was like, well, it is for me. But of course, because they do have cultural strength, their whole approach to making stuff is very, very different. Their headspaces are very different.
But then, like, your work is all... I would argue you do have cultural strength, and we do, because...
Well, we do, but...
It's so different, isn't it?
But they were saying about data. They were talking about data specifically. Uh-huh. But that's why... And we spent a lot of time, and it was fascinating because part of that show is also, and we haven't captured so much of that, but their view of data is different from our view. Like Xixin's view of what's important from a Chinese woman's perspective, you know, she was asking questions about what's the right age for a woman to have a child.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's all sorts of other cultural pressures that if you live in China or India would appear.
Yeah.
So both Terence, Maruk and Xixin had quite a different thought about what would be there. And at the end they did say, well, you know, once there's no data, we're nobody anyway, which is also fascinating.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I Don't Love You Anymore, the video designers, we were talking about a digital death. because it's fast. What happens? We're always there now.
Yeah.
We're never going to die because we'll have some kind of weird digital footprint if we choose to have it.
Yeah.
I mean, even Facebook offers you that already.
Yeah.
It's scary.
It is scary. There's a large part of the show that I don't want to spoil, but it kind of like is a very emotional part of the show.
Yeah.
And that kind of triggered a lot for me in terms of like exploring my own family's digital footpaths and people who are no longer here anymore. And like my dad has had his Facebook page, he's passed away now, he's had his Facebook page memorialized.
Yeah.
Which is so strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
To have that. And I'm also kind of glad because it means there's an archive that I can look over and like I remember things like photos and stuff that I would completely forget. But it's also very scary that these social media companies have our data in that way.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
We're still a stat and we're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it?
So obviously you talked a bit about it now with like the two dance groups coming from China and India. Can you share a bit about how this seed started? How did this manifest into two contemporary dance groups?
I think it probably started when I was working with the London Olympics because I went to Beijing for the Chinese Olympics.
Yeah.
And I've been to India a few times, so I haven't really been to modern China until I got this opportunity to go for the Beijing Olympics. And it just struck me as how modern, how different Chinese people are in China than they are in the UK. And it's the same for India. You go to India and you go, oh, well, it's kind of different.
Yeah.
Mm. And it was so forward-looking and it felt so futuristic. I felt like, oh, this is really exciting. And there was it was really dynamic. And I was thinking, well, nobody tells that story.
Mm.
You know, we're always seen as somebody who's at the lower end of the, either intellectually or socially or socially inept, perhaps. Mm. That's quite a common stereotype of Chinese and Indian people, or poor. Well, okay, people that seem more educated is an assumption.
The model minority myth kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, God, there are people dancing in the street. Everywhere in Shanghai, and it was just a whole, and people were laughing so much.
Yeah,
the thing I do remember about this trip, certainly the actually a subsequent trip, was I was like, wow, I've never seen people laugh so much.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, we're not all. Why don't we see that? Why don't we see that? So I think it was from that point that I thought, well, look, we know so little about these places.
Yes,
what's a very simple way of just capturing just even a millisecond of the fact that these are both progressive modern countries. And whatever we produce in culture in the UK always seems to be from the point of view of a colonial background.
Yeah.
Like but a lot of the stories that we hear on television or on stage or even in visual art are often stories which are looking backwards.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just want to do something that's looking forwards.
Mm.
And actually, Europe won't be there in the future. In the same way that you look at whatever happened to the Roman Empire, you know, and you look around the kind of a pile of stones that's now the Colosseum.
Mm.
Well, that's going to be Europe in a few thousand years' time. And the energy's going to go back somewhere else. And you just forget that we are in the dying days of an empire.
Yeah.
The North European Empire. Mm. And actually, it's going to be super incredible elsewhere. I mean, I'm talking thousands of years ahead, perhaps. But you realize that things change and you can't always be looking backwards.
Yeah.
And I was just so invigorated by the positivity of Chinese people and Indian people that I felt there.
Mm.
And it's, you know, just because they were happy and they were laughing.
Yeah. They're not stopping. No. They're not stopping. They're not looking at the West and thinking, what are we doing? Like Americans are with us. With the kind of the data aspects as well, when I saw kind of what was pictured on the animation, even I had this colonial mindset of like, how come there's no stats relating to like the UK with like Asian people in the UK? And I'm like, oh my God, that's just clicked.
Yeah.
That's my own colonial kind of mindset of thinking that there needs to be something that talks about the UK, Asians in the UK, when it doesn't have to. And another thing that crossed my mind when I was just like seeing the collaboration of the dancers all coming together was like, why has there never been anything like this before with Chinese and Indian people collaborating in this way, in a way that doesn't draw on just our pain and just our, our colonial histories. So yes, thank you so much for kind of creating this, because it's so powerful.
I think just even that, yeah, you're right. I hadn't realised that. But when I thought, my God, there are people flying into this, into Manchester to make this thing. I was sitting just before we started rehearsals. And young people.
Yeah.
Both companies are very young and very dynamic. So it's really refreshing.
With the two dance groups, they were rehearsing in their respective home countries. So how was that process of connecting them both together virtually and then in person?
Well, I met them both in person. At some point. Funnily enough, Shishan doesn't remember when I met her in person because it was so long ago.
Oh, right.
But luckily, I've got a video of Shishan and I was like, look, here it is.
Yeah.
In fact, when I did a presentation to the whole cast, I found the first photographs of every first meeting I ever had with them.
That's amazing.
Which was really quite sweet.
Yeah.
And then, so I did, I have met with them in person, but then everything else has been done virtually.
Mm-hmm.
But because I worked on these big shows, I guess, I thought, well, I'm sure it's possible to create something by just mapping it out. I mean, culture is very hard because, of course, dance is very hard because it does require two bodies to touch. So at some point it had to happen in real space.
Mm.
But a lot of it was, well, actually, we can talk about all of this and we can create all these pieces and hopefully we'll be able to mesh them together. So it was trying to divide a show that was kind of made in two halves.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because on the first day, my concept of the fact there were two halves had gone because they instantly collaborated.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, that was meant to be Shishan over here by herself and that was meant to be Terence by himself, kind of these two parallel worlds. But no, they immediately went, well, if we want to make this a better show, we need to do stuff together.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of mapping out and a lot of kind of all thinking about what can we do, how can we put this together, and a lot of Zoom conversations.
I can imagine across different time zones as well. Yeah. Wow. What, you must have a great producer.
Kwong and Ruby. I mean, they're incredible, both of them.
Yeah.
But Kwong Lee has just been astounding in terms of, by the way, it's this time in China now and then it's going to be this. So we can't have a meeting then because they go, is that okay?
They're having their siestas.
Yes. And then I'm in Spain and not even in the UK. So it's like, wow, that's a further hour back or forward. Yeah.
But we were saying earlier, it wouldn't have happened without COVID.
Yeah. I think this idea of being able to work remotely, it has changed things. And we have found lots of ways of sharing stuff and being able to talk about stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as we kind of touched on before, so the main characters who focus on the relationship between Cash and Liam. So Liam's British Chinese and Cash is of British Indian heritage. And I really got a sense that the relationship was really loving between them, a lot of banter. They both have like really strong Mancunian Northern accents. For me, that really spoke really strongly about inter-community connection and just how I find it really important for like the betterment of our society to just make sure that we're kind of outside of our echo chambers and not just kind of within our own. Why was this dynamic important for you to include here in terms of their relationship?
Because we do. Human relationships are really important, I guess. And, partly this came from Jude Christian, who's the dramaturg as well, because I was in, we were looking at this kind of cold thing. We were trying to invent stories around virtual characters and how do we do this, and then all that stuff came up about AI characters and I was like, oh, that's really inhuman, isn't it? But of course the person that really helped me with this project, Shobhana Galanti, who's an actress from Manchester, actor and writer, who's written that amazing book about dementia as well. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, Shobi is a Mancunian true and true.
Yeah.
As is Josh, who is Liam. And yes, I've always loved... Shobi's become more and more rooted in Manchester. We've worked together on every single show.
Wow. Yeah. So you're good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it just reminded me so much of, my relationships with my elders and my family as well. But also the people that I'm friends with who I do see as like kind of like an anti-figure. Like I, within my building, I have a Ghanaian auntie who lives like a few doors down, and we always, because my fiance is Ghanaian, we make food and like give it to her and like vice versa. And there's like a really nice like community feel. And yeah, that is literally just so, that is so important. I think that's what matters, first of all.
And in the story, she is Manchester and she's never been to either India or China.
Yeah.
She's probably only been to Liverpool, if that, probably. She's really, you know, she doesn't move. And that was part of this sort of tension of the story of this idea that she might be of different heritage, but actually she's only, her experience is a learnt experience, even culturally.
Yeah.
And it's Liam who's out having fun on a beach party in Goa and messing about. And he's like, well, that's actually not what it's really like, guys. which it doesn't matter about race in that sense. I think that relationship should speak to everybody. I mean, all of the stories should speak to everybody.
Yeah.
It's not just a story about Asian, as it were, because I think that dynamic does change things. It is a universal story, but it is anchored in this kind of conflict, or not conflict, but like...
Yeah, the kind of banter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wondered whether it was like an intentional thing to have that banter, because when I think about kind of like, and I don't know whether this is me with my own kind of British Chinese lens who dissects everything that's kind of vaguely related to race, but when I was looking at kind of like the collaborations between the dancers, but also the kind of the scenes where it's like quite angry, there's a lot of tension there, the kind of crabs in a barrel, every Asian has to fight for themselves kind of mentality, like I don't know whether that was intentional, whether that crossed your mind at all, because that was something that I took away, where I've had a lot of internalized racism, I think, growing up myself, where I'll look at other Asians and be like, I'm not like them. Yeah. I'm different to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I'm not at all. And like kind of coming through that journey of like kind of understanding my place in my society, and actually now really trying hard to embrace my community a lot more. And I don't know whether that was even intentional within that, or...
A lot of that was also from Jude too. Mm. I don't know if we made that intentionally, but I think also the actors brought a lot in terms of their performances. And, actually all the tech stuff as well. No, we did want to... Yeah, we do have it. You're right. We do have it. We do have the thing about being Asian and who's the better Asian. She does say it. It's true.
And it was a very kind of like, you know, you joke with your friends about kind of each other's cultures, and you kind of like have, you know, make jests and stuff. I think I thought about that quite a lot when I was watching it myself. Looking at Indian and Chinese cultures in the UK, I don't know what your perspective of it is, growing up in London, how our communities are quite siloed, even though historically we've got ancient history going back to like the Silk Road to more recent history with the opium trade tying both India and China together. But do you think, from a British perspective, like, have you observed whether our communities have ever been interconnected before?
I've not noticed them being interconnected, and it is quite divisive in terms of things like public funding. You know, people get money for being Indian or Chinese. You wouldn't necessarily find stuff that's together. So I think the structures of the UK disallow that. There are a few interesting things, like the Barclay Foundation now funds work from Asia. It's a big funding organization, which includes China, Korea, India. I mean, they're correctly using it. But for many, many years, I think the Chinese community has been so protected, but I mean, not siloed. Yeah, absolutely siloed herself.
Yeah.
And quite often that means you look, as I said before, you look backwards, or you do stuff that you call traditional, which is a word I never understand what that quite means.
Mm.
But you do stuff that's like about preserving heritage rather than evolving heritage.
Mm.
And it does interest me a lot, because I think in the 80s in London, certainly, there was that whole Asian underground movement with Talvin Singh and the Blue Note Club.
Mm.
And it influenced fashion. I mean, you look now at people and you go, well, that's, you know, you realize you're wearing Indian clothes, you know, like big shirts over trousers and even head wraps. I'm like, wow, this is all the influence of the stuff that's happened.
Yeah.
And I don't think in the same way that that has happened from the same way from the Chinese community. But also it's finished now, but it did happen.
It's something that I think I've thought about a lot, because especially because like we said before, being when I take a form, it's Asian or it's Chinese, it's kind of like one or the other. But then when I'm lumped into kind of like Asian, when you think about Asian in the specifically UK context, it's usually South Asian communities. Yes. Like think about BBC Radio Asia, usually South Asian. There's no East or Southeast Asian kind of cultures kind of spoken.
And they don't encourage them to cross.
Exactly. And I think even kind of like looking at how our communities have formed, like there's a lot of kind of religious institutions or for South Asian communities, so people will live and reside near their kind of religious houses, whereas like Chinese communities, we don't really have that as much. Like, you know, there might be like Buddhist places or like Chinese Christian churches, but really far and few between. And like from my perspective and perhaps some other people that I've known before, especially Chinese people in the restaurant hospitality industry, you want to be far away from your competition. You don't want to have another Chinese takeaway down the road. So you'll move to like far out in the sticks where there's not other Chinese people to compete with. And it's a whole crabs in the barrel mentality where kind of you want to drag each other down and like helping each other up kind of thing. And then like even very, very recently, I think this is from a 2020 onwards type of thing, the term EC, East and Southeast Asian, has only very, very recently become a kind of a more wider known acronym, which has carved out the space for people like me. But even within that, we have East Asian, we have Chinese, Vietnamese, Filipino, you know, like so diverse. But even Chinese alone, like I don't identify with someone who's from mainland China, but I also don't identify with the Hong Kong British national overseas who have just come over to the UK as well. Yeah. And we're so, so, so diverse within our own communities that it's like, how can we even get to that point of inter-community connection when there's still so much work to do?
Do we do that? Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that will ever happen?
I'm always hopeful. I think, I'm like a pendulum. I swing between cynicism and then like being really hopeful for the future and then being like, we're all doomed. But I feel like it is, you know, like this show for me is a really kind of, it symbolizes a lot for me to kind of just having been in that room, having this conversation with you right now, with our really different experiences of the world, but being able to have like an understanding. I feel like we all have more in common than we actually think we do. So I am hopeful. Yeah, for sure.
Good. I'm glad because you can get very cynical about all of this stuff. And there is, I think for a long time, I probably did become quite cynical about all of this stuff. But I was like, you know, travel and see things and experience things. And you realize you don't have to be.
Yeah.
You know, and then not just China, India. But again, I think also when I met some of the crazy artists out in China as well, I was like, especially music. So the music scene in Shanghai was incredible. I had in India. And it was kind of, That all that was, I found so refreshing, because that to me felt like London in the 80s. But the underground music, or just the music scene in Shanghai, was amazing.
Yeah.
And it included lots of videos, it included really, you know, all of those sub-bass things that I really like. It was really, and I was like, okay. So that's part of me also is like, well, surely we could reignite that here by bringing a little bit of that energy.
Which I think
that show has energy. That's
100%. 100%. It does. 100%. And I love that they're from Shanghai as well. Yeah. I've never been to Shanghai, but I just imagine people in Shanghai to be so cool and so well dressed. And like,
they're really well dressed. Oh my god, the pressure on wardrobe every morning when you're going to rehearsals.
You look Chinese. Super cool. I was like, straight away.
Thank you, but there is a little pressure from. The companies, because they are really well dressed, I have to say.
It's like when I see mainland Chinese students walking around, I'm like, how do they afford that t-shirt? Because that looks designer.
Because it's really cheap as well. And they but the thing is, a really good quality as well.
I know. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
So I think we've talked a bit about this in terms of like identity and like the character's investigation in terms of more so Liam's character. And it's really ongoing in terms of kind of like this exploring our identities. And Do you think this was informed by your experience at all in terms of?
Well, I'm not mixed race Chinese, but it, I do think it's Jude. I think it is the dramaturg. Yeah. I think she really told her story actually, because she's Malaysian Chinese European. I'm trying to think if that's the right terminology. Yes, it is. And she's like, well, this is my story, because she said I've done a lot of stuff, but I would love to tell my story.
Yeah.
And this was a vehicle for her to tell that.
Yeah, brilliant.
So I would say that it's more her in a way, that part of it, because it is traumatic. Mm. It must be traumatic.
Yeah.
I deal with my own demons about the Caribbean and India, but the Chinese aspect of it is probably more from her.
Yeah.
But it's such a valid story, and it's so interesting. Mm.
And do you feel like that those themes, though, even though you're not British Chinese, but you have kind of mixed heritage, dual nationalities, like that there's a lot kind of connection.
Yeah, yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think most people, regardless of racial identity, I think most people have multiple identities these days.
Yeah.
You know, anything from gender to sexuality to all sorts. I think we lived in, I would say, like a blended society, which I find really inspiring.
Yeah.
I do like that.
Yeah.
That everyone, anyone, you actually question them and you find out that there's much more to them than you ever imagined.
Yeah.
So I always like that about any person on this planet is of some kind of... has some kind of trauma based on around their identity, or not necessarily trauma, but are dealing with identity issues.
Yeah.
You know, I think most people are these days.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing about society, actually.
Mm-mm.
There's a bit more delicacy around some things that never used to exist.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I feel like identity for me has really shifted from giving myself a moniker of just being like, I am a British Chinese woman from Warrington, blah blah blah, because I feel like it is so malleable, it can change constantly, like so many facets of myself. And I think like sometimes I haven't been given the space creatively to be able to kind of do that, because it kind of, I think sometimes identity is placed on you whether you like it or not. Like I'm just thinking about how I've had people, like white people who I work with, they come up to me and they go, oh, do you know about marketing in China? And I'm like, why would I know about marketing in China? Like, I don't know about the technology that they use and the apps and stuff, because I've never lived in China. I've been there once when I was 16. We're not given that space to be able to just explore that, because it's then put onto us and like it's like a mirror held up to us, be like, I see you as this. And I think,
but I mean, there are so many things about China I just think are incredible. First of all, I think it was the one place beyond belief. It was super easy to be vegetarian.
Yeah, because of the Buddhists.
No, just in terms of choice, I think people are into choice in China. So it wasn't like if you didn't want to eat meat, they take it. It's not like it's mixed in with stuff. I guess if it's super easy to be vegetarian.
Yes,
women I saw in jobs and positions that I'd never seen in a very, very normalized way.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's impressive.
Mm.
And I said, people laughed.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this is, I don't know. I think people have this impression that Chinese is a kind of everyone's, I think people view China like North Korea.
I think they relate us to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah.
And that's all they see.
Yeah.
Which is so frustrating.
And when you go there, I'm like, wow, it's really not that at all.
Yeah. So what do you hope people will take away from watching The Accountants then?
I don't know, actually. That's a fascinating question. I think they're going to take away a lot of energy. I think there's a lot of energy. I think a questioning of, as I said, a questioning of identity, regardless of Chinese or Indian. I think the show is an interesting reflection on contemporary culture, regardless of it being Chinese or Indian. It's like, yes, we are categorized and data rated no matter what, and what happens if you take that data away. So I hope that philosophical part of what happens if I have no data, I hope that's what people reflect on a little bit. I hope people are excited about, as excited as I am about China and India. like these future nations, and, you know, and maybe just learning a few things, like the fact that there are 2 Chinese space women and 4 Indian space women, I'm obsessed with space for some reason. So I think that, you know, there's a little micro sense of you might learn something about culture, but I think the whole experience is kind of more than the sum of its parts. It's not just like a dance show. I think it's reflective in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thinking. Mm. I hope people think a little bit. That will be my, whatever it is, if it triggers some kind of thought, rather than just like, oh, I enjoyed it or I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think if it just makes you think, oh, you're super happy.
Amazing. I think it definitely will. Even just speaking with a few white people who I talked to the rehearsal about, they were saying that the identity element of it, we've really got them thinking about their own, which they should, like you said, we're not kind of, we're changeable all the time.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think that is something that people, I think, would definitely take away. So Easter egg from the show, if you had to eat one food forever, what would it be?
It would probably be something with noodles for sure. If I crave food, it's actually always Southeast Asian food.
Is it?
Always.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. Yeah. What type, like, is there?
I think something, a noodle soup, probably.
I'm the same. So are you team rice or team noodles then?
I'm team noodles, either night. But the problem is I'm gluten intolerant, so I'm rice noodles or konjac.
Right, yeah.
Or the other noodles, but yes. Yeah. I do really crave Chinese food.
Yeah,
actually,
nice.
Like homemade Chinese food.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah, we have a bit of a competition going on internally at BCN with like whether you're team rice or team noodles. Currently, we're swinging towards rice at the moment is the consensus, which we've called it the rice supremacy because they're kind of like everyone always likes rice. But yeah, I'm very happy to hear that you like noodles. So did you recognize that line from the show?
No.
That was a question that...
Oh, was it?
Oh, my God.
Terrible. God, we've seen... We have so many questions of that show at some point. We had thousands. Yeah, we asked all the collaborators to ask... I think we had a list of 20 questions at some point of each collaborator.
Right, yeah.
So I think my brain got addled on that. It's like all of these questions. I mean, chopsticks and forks feature, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Or hands. Would you rather eat with
chopsticks?
I'm very competent with chopsticks. I cook with chopsticks.
Yeah, it's so much easier.
It's so much easier to cook with chopsticks. I bought some for this because I was like, I can't use a spoon for that. No, chopsticks. I don't understand why people don't cook with chopsticks.
Yeah.
If you cook with chopsticks, why doesn't everybody? much easier to cook with chopsticks.
Yeah. It's scrambling eggs, everything.
Everything. Yeah, for sure.
And then eating with hands, are you...
Eating with chopsticks. I have to eat with chopsticks. No, really, I don't like eating. I don't mind eating with hands.
Yeah.
But I now always gravitate to eating with chopsticks.
Right.
Even Indian food.
I love that.
But chopsticks are much... And so much food, it tastes better and you can... Food with chopsticks does taste better because you can get exactly what you want.
This is the radical change, the inter-community connection that we need. More Indians using chopsticks.
Well, it's because I'm very specific about how I eat. So I will eat one ingredient until I'm left with my favourite ingredient.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You do it like that rather than the
horizon. Very systematic in my eating diet.
That is fascinating. That is fascinating how people eat so differently.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit of a mixture of everything, just like variety in my mouth. Like,
I always think, how does it go when it lands?
Oh, like a kind of like...
Like, what do you want on top of the other one? Yeah. It's like the thing, do you eat a fruit salad at the beginning of a meal or the end of a meal? Because in theory, it's fermenting in you, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do you want that under a bed of rice? Not necessarily.
Fermentation's good, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but which order? Do you want the fruit on top? You want the rice on the bottom or the fruit on top?
Do you know what, actually, when I've had really fermented food like kimchi, then if you have that on its own, then it's not going to do good things for you.
I've learned that
firsthand. So yeah, maybe mixing it together is all having
or mixing it, but you have to, I always think which order to put it into your...
I've never really thought about that before.
Well, because ultimately it does come out the other end.
Yeah.
So you have to, thinking, and that's why you don't drink. I learned this all from the Rastas.
You don't drink.
That's why you don't drink
whilst you're eating.
Yes,
that's a Chinese thing as well.
Yeah, and Rasta.
Is it? Yeah. So do you that then?
Yes. You don't drink when you eat because, of course, you'll ruin all your. Your organs won't do what they're meant to do, which is process the food, isn't it?
Yeah. A lot of my Chinese relatives, I offer them a drink when we're having dinner. They're like, no. But I need to do that. I think as I'm getting kind of like into my 30s and so, I really need to think about digestive health a lot more. So finally, we asked most guests this question: what brings you the most joy?
No, I think being alive. It sounds really obvious, but it really does because, I'm alive and I'm very healthy.
Yeah,
and I think I'm positive.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, those really are so important.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've got older, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, awful how many people of my age are now dead.
Yeah,
and it's just like, oh my God, I'm still going and I'm still making stuff and I'm still creative.
Yeah,
but the very simple thing is health and happiness. And that sounds like an old person thing to say, but it really is.
No, yeah,
because you forget and you kind of think, oh, maybe it's material wealth. And honestly, I don't care about money at mm-hmm. all anymore. I used to really care about those things.
Yeah,
and even the creative process, I think I used to overvalue that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, it's like, well, will this make people happy or mm-hmm. are people happy? Mm-hmm. Are they enjoying this? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I worry that I've kind of eroded my own creative self somewhere along the line, because that used to be the biggest thing for me, just being able to be creative all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, no, I think I would say it was that.
I love that answer so much. I think that's what I need to hear as well, because I think sometimes, especially the positivity aspects and just kind of prioritizing health and happiness over anything else. Because I think, you know, when I saw this like stupid TikTok video. It wasn't stupid, but it was basically saying how like when we imagine scenarios in our heads, like saying you imagine an argument with someone or like a really horrible, tragic scenario, your brain can't actually separate that from reality. So your brain experiences it as if you're actually going through it. And so like things like manifestation or like talking positively about yourself versus talking negatively can have a real impact on your body and who you are as a person, your overall mental health and happiness, essentially. And I've been really trying to get kind of like at that stage of feeling just like I can be happy and positive.
I mean, it does take you a while to get there. I had some, you know, I left London
mm-hmm.
and because I just felt I was exhausted and I mm-hmm. felt very, you know, overpowered by the city and the place. And
mm-hmm.
and I left because I thought, well, actually, I've got my values are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, I did a project in Brazil with this guy from Carnival many years ago in Rio. And he said, when my life was going wrong, I went into the jungle for 10 years. Then I came out and now I'm happy. And I thought, well, yes, and I kind of have done the same thing. So it is, focusing on that is so important.
Yeah, that's really inspiring. And it makes me just want to move out of the UK and go somewhere nice where we're not in this system.
Yeah, you just say sort out your economy.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, I'm lucky enough because, you know, I was lucky. You see, I don't know how young people manage these days because I was lucky enough to be able to buy something in London when you could afford to buy something in London.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible anymore.
Yeah.
Or even in Manchester.
Manchester's about the same now, to be honest. But also, yeah, I mean, as much as a feminist as I am, my plan is to marry my civil engineer husband who can carry on earning money so I don't have to work anymore. And I can carry on being a creative and just do my little non-profit projects. But yeah, thank you so much, Keith,
for coming to the show.
I loved it. I'm so glad I did. And
I'm glad you're. I hope you're coming on to the showing and hope other.
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely. I will be. Yeah. So thank you
very much. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you.
So that was it for today's podcast. I hope you really enjoyed it. Please do check the show notes for the amazing £3 offer. How amazing was Keith, though? I could have chatted to him all day. He was just so fascinating. And the amount that I go, yes, in the podcast kind of just shows you how everything he was saying, I just really soaked in. You can follow him in our show notes and find Keith at Keith Kahn.com. London on Instagram. And please support the podcast by buying BeSeen a bowl of rice. 100% of donations now go towards BeSeen, so you can check out our Ko-fi link, which is also in the show notes. But I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and thank you so much for listening.